Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about strip tillage and just our general suggestions, recommendations, and some of the pitfalls you got to watch out for when it comes to strip tillage. If you've got any questions about that or anything going on in your farm, you can certainly give us a call. The number is 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. You could also email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on X, Ag PhD Media, or Brian Hefty. Well, my brother Darren is out traveling today, but we're getting some last-minute travel things in, and we've been around the country doing some meetings here in the last few weeks, too. Got a little bit of that coming up yet, but it's getting just about time to farm here. So frost has been out of the ground since late February. We got a little dusting of snow again the other day, but I mean, I'm excited. Spring is just, well, technically it is spring today, but it doesn't feel like spring when you look outside and it's cold and there's a little bit of snow on the ground. But next week we might just hit 70 degrees one of those days, and it's not long and we're going to be rolling, because for us, the first plant date for corn, crop insurance, April 10th. We will be out there April 10th, if the ground is fit, of course. So we'll see. Oh, and by the way, a lot of times people use the word fit for soil. I think we need to start changing that. Instead of it being fit, we need to call it dry, because that's really what we're talking about with soil being fit. Is it dry enough to go farm? And you're not going to create a bunch of issues out there. Well, anyway, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in a little bit. As well today. We've got lots of questions already coming in, but I do want to start today by talking about strip tillage just a little bit. And I'll just give you a little background on our own farm. So it was probably almost 30 years ago now, and the NRCS and the Farm Service Agency were talking to us about our rolling hills that we have on our farm. We have some highly erodible land, and they wanted to have a certain amount of residue left out there. And so my dad, who had grown up in north central Iowa and was farming there until he married our mom in South Dakota, moved here after a couple of years after they were married. So that was 1969, he moved to South Dakota. Well, anyway, he was used to doing moldboard plowing, disking or double disking, and field cultivating. So there was tillage, followed by tillage. Well, we talked about, hey, let's try some no-till. And he about lost his mind that first year. He's like, I don't know. I don't like it. I'm not used to it. And everything. I mean, he had all kinds of excuses. But I'll tell you what, we got a big rain that first year, and we were out in strip till, or I should say no-till, and we were out in conventional till, and oh, you could tell the erosion difference. And so at that point, he's like, well, maybe it's not so bad. So anyway, we did, I'm going to call it roughly 40% of our farm, 30% of our farm. I don't think it was quite half. Anyway, as no-till for about 10 years. Here are the two issues that we found on our farm. Now, please, if you are a no-tiller, don't think that I'm attacking no-till or I don't like no-till. No-till is a great tool. It's tremendous. Here were the two problems we had, though. Number one, nutrient stratification, because we didn't farm any differently other than we stopped doing tillage. In other words, we continued to broadcast things like phosphorus and zinc and copper and potassium and all that. Well, when you don't get much rain and you have heavy soil, and you're dealing with nutrients that don't move well in soil at all, well, as you can imagine, they aren't going anywhere. Phosphorus, I mean, it'd take decades for it to get down into where most of our plant roots are growing, which is 4 to 9 inches deep. That's not going to happen unless you place them there. So anyway, that was our own fault, and I know that. But anyway, we had the nutrient stratification issue. The other issue we had is we liked plant early, just like I was saying a minute ago. April 10th. That sounds great to me. What do you know about no-till compared to strip till compared to conventional till when it comes to warming up the soil where you're going to plant the seed? Well, the conventional till is going to be the warmest. There's no question about that. No-till is going to be the coldest. Also, no question about that. So we had slow early growth. Slow early growth plus nutrient stratification and our crop yields weren't the best. So we decided to start doing some strip-till on where we had no-tilled. And immediately, we could see the two major differences. Number one, we were replacing the nutrients 8 to 10 inches deep, which was great. And also, in our no-till, and I didn't mention this before, we didn't do any tillage first. We should have done some kind of deep tillage, zone building, something, just anything to break up the hard pans. We didn't do that before we started no-tilling. We just jumped right into it. And so we had some hard pan layers at 4 inches, 6 inches, somewhere in that range. Well, when we did strip till, I mean, there's no compaction all the way down to the bottom of where we strip tilled, which again was 8 to 10 inches deep. So all those things are great. And of course, the seed bed was warmer. Now, I'm not going to say it was as warm as conventional till in the strip, but it's pretty close. So we really, really liked that. So over the next couple, 3 years, we switched all our no-till acres over to strip till. Now, the downside to strip till, yeah, I mean, for us anyway, was you had to have a really good operator in the fall running this machine because that's where we're going to plant the next spring. We're going to plant right over the top of that. So you have to have RTK GPS. GPS by itself, not good enough. It's got to be RTK. We want very accurate. We want everything to be very accurate. The other issue that we ran into with that, though, is just the trail that we would get with the machine versus with the planter, because we do farm on the contour some. We do have some rolling hills. So a little bit of a challenge. We've kind of worked through that over the years. But anyway, lots of great things about strip till. Biggest downside is you need a good operator, and the machine costs some money, and I will say it takes some time. You don't get as many acres done in a day as if you were going out there, whatever, disking, field cultivating, something like that. Just broadcast spreading fertilizer. So few things that, you know, a little bit on the downside, a lot of good things. So we really like strip till. It's a nice tool. We also do continue to do some conventional till on the farm to continue to compare as well. We'll talk more about strip tillage right after this.
Can you predict the future? I can't. That's why when I'm planting soybeans, I treat with Heads Up seed treatment. With more than 15 years of research, Heads Up offers proven protection against both white mold and sudden death syndrome. So no matter what the year throws at you, you've already taken that first step to be prepared. Don't let your beans suffer from disease when they're just starting to look their best. Tell your seed dealer you need Heads Up seed treatment. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/face.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
What's the difference between John, who bought Enlist One herbicide and Instinct Next Gen nitrogen stabilizer, and Tom, who bought Enlist One and Instinct Next Gen and used True Choice? Only about $5,000 extra in Tom's pocket. Choose True Choice and get up to 10% back. It's really as simple as that. Start saving at Corteva.com/save more.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Today in the show, we are talking about strip tillage. We're live in the Morton studio. If you've got a question for us, you can call us 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. All right, so first on the show today, we got Sean Arthur with us with Environmental Tillage Systems. So ETS, or Environmental Tillage Systems, they make the Soil Warrior. We run one of those machines on our own farm. Sean, how you doing today?
Hey, Brian, I'm doing well.
Great. All right, so we're talking about strip till a little bit today. What are the top two or three questions you typically get from farmers who have never done this practice before?
Well, one of the first things that I get is kind of a broad question. Guys say, how do I implement this on my farm? And it's a great question, but that's kind of the big target that we're shooting for. And the key is to kind of break that down into a lot of smaller questions to help really refine what they're trying to achieve. So when somebody's thinking about switching over to strip till, I try to understand what their current practices are and what their goals are. For many people, it's going to be to, if they're coming from full width tillage, the concept of strip till appeals to them because they're trying to do less tillage across their field, be maybe a little bit more conservation minded and not disrupting so much of the soil. Yep. And pick up some of the efficiencies that come along with that. So for those guys, I mean, it's kind of an easy no-brainer type of a progression because we're working less of the soil. You're going to have more cover on the top, and then hopefully you keep that valuable resource between your fences where you want it to be.
What are maybe a couple of common misperceptions about strip till?
Some misconceptions would be the statement that it can't work on my farm. And I guess to elaborate on that first point, we see so many people that have implemented strip tillage successfully that there's probably somebody with a farming practice or acres that are similar to yours that can get it implemented onto their own farm. So when we talk about moving over to strip till, the residue management can be a key part of that, how you're dealing with the surface residue that you've got to make sure that if you're coming from a corn crop or a soybean crop in the prior year, to make sure that we can get that residue handled and either incorporated into the strip or moved off to the side to make sure that we can then effectively till the soil in the way that is going to give you a zone that is appropriate for planting into.
Yeah, we've done just about everything there is to do with strip till. Done it in the fall, done it in the spring, done it with a shank, done it with a coulter. We have gone into continuous corn, like really high yield corn too. And I mean, there are lots of different things that I'm with you. People say, oh, it can't work. And I go, well, we've done it and it seems to work just fine for me. I would say this though, when we first started strip tilling, and actually going back to when we first started no tilling, a lot of people told us leave the corn stalk standing as tall as possible. And that was one of the things for us. I just found I really like the chopping corn head. That was the best way to move lots and lots of residue when we were in those continuous corn situations. So is that something that you run into as an issue out there where people are concerned about the residue? And what do you think of the chopping corn head as you go in through it with the strip till machine?
Well, that's a great point to bring up. If we're thinking of a corn-on-corn situation, especially some of these high-yielding hybrids that we're shooting for each year,
yep.
And if you got good stalk strengths along with that, there's going to be a lot of residue on the surface. So hopefully that prior crop was planted with the RTK guidance so that you've got straight rows out there. And then my first suggestion would be that when we're coming back to do strips into that corn residue, we typically want to offset from last year's corn row. So if you're on 30-inch corn, you know, you offset 16 inches. That way you're not dealing with the prior year root ball, which helps us out quite a bit. So you don't have that root mass and that strong stalk sticking up that you're trying to put through your machine. It's going between each of those strip tillage units. And then as far as the residue, we do have guys that'll do it both ways. Leaving a taller stalk out there is going to be less stalks that you're trying to cut or move with your row cleaners for your strip tillage unit. We do have guys that still run a chopping corn head and they want to size all of that residue, but then you can end up with a little bit more fluff that can be tougher to move. The guys that are running a chopping corn head sometimes have to wait for a rain on those stalks in the fall to make those stalks settle down a little bit to make them easier and more manageable to use, because residue flow does become quite an issue. On 30-inch corn, it's quite manageable for us, but as we think about strip tillage in the industry as a whole, corn on corn can be challenging, and then especially if you go down to narrower rows, it can be a significant challenge as you're trying to put more residue through a tighter space between those row units. At Soil Warrior, we do offer a row spacing of wider rows down to 30-inch, down to 22, and even 20-inch rows, and we can successfully make strips into a significant amount of residue even on that 20-inch row spacing.
Sean, anything else you want to leave our listeners with today when they think about strip tillage? And I realize, things are certainly different in the spring than the fall, and right now we're heading into the spring. So anything in particular somebody should be thinking about today when it comes to strip till this spring?
Well, after the fall that we had this last season, I mean, it was a long beautiful fall for much of the Midwest that allowed a significant amount of tillage to get done, whether it was conventional till or strip till. Most of the customers that I'm working with, if fall strips was their plan, they were able to get that achieved last fall. But we do have quite a few growers that plan on doing their strips in the spring. They would rather leave that that residue in that field undisturbed in the fall. That allows them to come back in the spring, make that decision for what they're going to do for a fertility program and their nitrogen, and put that out right before the planter runs. So that's a great option, but strip tillage can give guys that flexibility to run in fall or spring, depending on what your farm is set up to accomplish. For guys that are getting ready to go out here this spring, my recommendation, whether you're doing strip till or even conventional tillage, anytime we're taking a piece of iron and dragging it through the soil, we want to make sure that we're really respecting the soil moisture and the conditions that you have out there in the field. Because if you're working that soil when it's too wet, it doesn't matter if it's in strip till or that conventional tillage pass, that can be something that creates an environment that's going to be challenging for your roots to get through all season long. Roots will struggle to get through it. Water is going to be either limited coming up or down when you get these rains, and that can be a big challenge and limit your crop. So as we're getting ready to head to the field in the next few weeks, make sure that you've got the patience to respect the soil conditions and go out there when the field's ready.
Yep, agree 100%. Again, that's Sean Arthur with Environmental Tillage Systems. Sean, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, let's head down to Iowa. We've got our friend Tony Wendler on with us. He's with Farm Shop MFG. Tony, how are you today?
I'm excellent, Brian. Thank you for asking.
All right, so we're talking strip tillage today. So what do you have for us today?
Strip tillage, you know, one of the things that we're seeing with germinator closing wheels, planting in strip till, I'm going to say in most conditions we're looking at it kind of like it's stale tillage. Germinators do a fantastic job of closing that furrow and getting the seed-to-soil contact that farmers are looking for. It's perfect conditions. I really like the strip till slash stale tillage for the way the soil works, the way the closing wheels work to get to that perfect germination environment. It turns out it's a really nice environment to work with.
Do you like seeing fall strip till or spring strip till? Or does it make a whole lot of difference with the closing wheels?
You can work with either. The spring is going to be more like a conventional tillage basis. I really, what my exposure has been more the fall. And so we're coming out there in the spring, hitting it with trash whip moving. I would prefer not to see the trash whip engaged too much, so it's not doing tillage.
Yep.
It's just cleaning the stuff off the surface.
Yep.
I really like seeing that environment for planting into. Again, when you're building your ridges in the spring, if you've where I'm at, you don't have the time to get it done too early, so it ends up being more like a spring tillage, and you know, that's not bad either. It works great, but getting it done in the fall and then coming in and working that environment just is slick. I like seeing that.
Tony, I got less than a minute left. Anything else you want to talk to us about today?
The anybody who's hasn't made a decision, or especially if you're still running rubber tires on your planter, whether you're doing things in conventional till or strip till, germinators work awesome. We're seeing very strong, productive outcomes in stale tillage or no till. Precision is identifying our wheel has a 13 bushel per acre advantage over the standard rubber tires, and in conventional 7. So those are awesome results, and even if they're half that number, they're still big numbers.
Again, that's Tony Wendler with Farm Shop MFG. Just go to farmshopmfg.com to check out more of his work. Tony, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Higher yield potential starts with the season-long systemic disease protection of Xyway brand fungicides from FMC. Xyway brand fungicides protect corn crops from key foliar diseases and support physiological benefits that help develop healthier, higher yielding corn for a difference you'll appreciate at harvest. Visit your FMC retailer for an at-plant advantage. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at Verify.com. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com. For the smallest investment with the biggest impact on yield, upgrade your planter with Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. To see how we stack up against the competition at a fraction of the cost, call us at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more, precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. We're talking about strip tillage today. Next on the show, we are pleased to be joined by Chad Henderson. He's with the Extreme Ag Group. And I will say, Chad, we've been talking about mostly heavier soils, northern part of the country, with strip till. Let's talk about your soils a little bit. A little lighter, a lot more rainfall. How do you use strip till on your farm?
Man, we use it any way we can.
Do you do it in the fall? Do you do it in the spring?
Yeah. So what we do is we're trying to chase the combines in the fall. And most time we're trying to finish up our bean harvest with our double crop beans, you know, behind our wheat. We're trying to finish those up by Thanksgiving. Well, that'll be about the time we try to fire the strip-till rig off, somewhere around the 15th of November on, you know. And we try to be finished, you know, the first week or so of December, according to weather permit. But we like to put our P&K out then. And then we come back in the spring with a freshener and put our liquid 28 out.
When are you planting in the spring?
I wish I had a little bit planted right now, but I ain't quite there yet. But I may set the planter this weekend. So, we're looking at planting, you know, any time from the 20th of March on.
Okay, so I guess here's my question for you. Up here, when we do our strip till in the fall, the ground freezes within 30 days, let's call it. You're not getting that down there. And so that fertilizer is sitting there for, let's call it 4 months. Are you concerned about loss, or is this the reason why you're only doing P&K, or how do you feel about all that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Wes, that's the reason we're only doing P&K. I mean, to tell you the truth, like our blend would be like at 150 pounds.
Yep.
It's more like a 13, 35, 35.
Okay.
You know, and that's just from the DAP. You know, we'll put a little bit of DAP in, and we're low mag, high cal. So we use a lot of K-mag. Mm-hmm. We found that works well for us. And so we won't, you know, the only nitrogen we'll get is what comes through the DAP if we decide to put DAP in. And then, like I said, we come back in the spring and we can really control it by running our freshener, and we'll run it. I like to start running at the end of February, the 1st of March, And you know how it is now with the rains, we can get some rains in the spring. And we'll like to run it and get us a rain on it. And then that gives us that good stale seed bed. We'll put about 15 gallon of 28005 down and humix also. And then we're ready to plant it. It takes a lot of load off the planter, you know, for as far as liquid.
For sure. So when you go out in the fall, how deep are, and we could almost call it winter. We would be in winter by that point, but around Thanksgiving time. So at that point, how deep are you going with your fertilizer? How deep are you placing it?
Ours is just has a hoe. We run an Orthman bar, a one tripper. Okay. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the reason that I've run Orthman, I like the Orthman bar. I like several of the bars. I like the Soul Warrior, you know, the Coon Krause makes a nice one. But this Orthman it's a narrow transport, and we got a lot of traffic down here, so we have to keep things narrow. So I've got it, and it don't have a pipe going all the way down. So I'm just kind of putting that fertilizer, just blending in that zone. So the bottom of our shank is somewhere around 6 to 8 inches is where we like to run the shank at.
Okay.
But it's kind of the hard pans that we have.
Sure. When you do that...
And remember, we're running behind wheat and soybean. So when we say wheat and soybeans, we'll no-till our wheat behind our corn or run a vertical tillage tool so we don't have any real ripping, you know. And so we'll put the wheat in, and then double-crop soybeans is planted behind the wheat. You know, so there's been several traffic patterns running, so we're really busting that zone ahead of our corn.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I feel, too, is a big advantage to strip-till. If I go deep enough, is I have broken up compaction, at least down to that depth, we know. All right, what else do you like, or what do you like in particular about strip-till?
I'd like the fact that I get that even. The thing, it's just real good on the planter. You know, I'm planting, and I'm not disturbing my middle part, so my biology is thriving in the middle of the row, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm only putting my salts down in that zone. Well, then, to combat that, you know, we use a lot of humics. We use a lot of, you know, other things in our planter and our dry as well to help combat that. And then I'm getting the rains to kind of wash that salt slowly out, you know? And it's not a lot. But it is a factor when, you know, the last 5-6 years we've really focused on the biology of the soil a lot. So, you know, that's a factor in that.
Yeah, when we switched to strip-till, I just felt like, I mean, yeah, it's not no-till. And it's not going to build your soil and build your organic matter as fast as no-till. But it's pretty darn good, way better than conventional till.
Yeah.
So I felt like I get a lot of the benefits of no-till, but then I also have that warm strip. I get the deeper placement of fertilizer, so I get a bunch of the benefits of conventional till, and it's kind of somewhere in between. So any other comments you got for us, Chad, about strip-till? Anything you like, don't like?
Yeah, you know what? What you need to look at on that is, you know, we run about 3,000 acres of corn every year. Mm-hmm. And with doing so, it gives my planter a place to start. We'll have a little bit of convention till, and we'll have about 1,000 to 1,500 acres of strip till, and it gives us somewhere to start planting. You know, if I was all no-till and we can't get that cover brush back, you know, if that planter, you know, as well as you can no-till and as good as no-till is for the soil and for the water, you know, and keeping everything from erosion, still we got to plant a crop, and we got to get started. And if you can't plant and that planter ain't kicking up a dust, it's almost safe to say it's too wet a lot of times, you know?
Yep.
And if you get the wrong rain behind it, it just really affects the corn coming out, you know, and the emergence. So it's kind of a big picture, and it's kind of a give and take on a few acres to do this way, get the planter going in the field, then you can do other things. You know, it's just a tool in the toolbox is what it really is.
We've been talking with Chad Henderson. He's with the Extreme Ag Group down in Alabama. Chad, great talking with you as always. Best of luck as you start planting, hopefully soon, like you say. Hopefully you have a great spring down there.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Appreciate it. All right, just to wrap things up on strip-till, I guess if you've been thinking about this and you haven't taken the leap into strip-till, I will just tell you, we always believe in starting small and making the mistakes on a few acres rather than on all your acres. So I would encourage you to do the same thing Darren and I did. We got a machine to use a couple different years for, I don't remember how many acres, couple 300 acres or something. So we farm about 3,500 crop acres, figure, oh, it's no big deal. We'll try 200-400 acres out of some new practice, whatever. Give that a shot. You're always going to learn. And I don't care how many people you talk to, how much you read up on any practice on the farm, until you actually do it yourself, you're never going to know it all. And there's always going to be something. You get into it and you go, oh, I wish I'd have known that. Nobody told me this. And so start small, try it out on your farm and go from there. But again, we really like no-till. We really like conventional till. We also really like strip till. Our job here at Ag PhD is always to help you be successful no matter how you would like to farm. So if you've got specific questions for us about strip till or anything else, you can certainly email us, radio@agphd.com. And right now, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, first question comes from Missouri. It's from Cole. He said, guys, thanks for the work you do to put on your show and educate growers about bettering their farm. My question involves phosphorus. It appears you guys utilize the Malic 3 soil test. We've always used Bray. What's the difference, and how does this affect the relationship to copper and zinc? So I would say this, Cole. The Bray 2, or the strong Bray test, is going to give you a similar reading to the Malic 3 test. The Malic 3 and the strong Bray, they are what we would call stronger extraction methods. They're going to pull more phosphorus out of the soil. So it's not necessarily what's there and available today. That's what the Bray 1 is for, or in high pH soils, the Olson test. So that tells you, or should tell you, what's available right now today for your crop. But what we'd kind of like to know is, well, how much do we think is going to come available over the course of the next growing season? And that's kind of the purpose of the Bray 2 and the Malic 3. So that's the difference there. As far as those ratios, if we're running Malic 3 on copper and zinc and phosphorus, we usually figure 10 to 1 phosphorus to zinc, 30 to 1 phosphorus to copper, in that general ballpark. When using the Bray tests, we use the Bray 1 phosphorus and compare that to DTPA copper and zinc using fairly similar ratios. Thanks for the question. Appreciate it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Just getting into your questions here in our Ag PhD mailbag time. If you have a question, just send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or you can give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. Next question here comes from Tyler down in Kansas. He says, guys, I have a brome field that's getting a lot of poverty grass. I've been told that poverty grass is growing because the ground is low on P and K. It's been recommended to spread a blend fertilizer with P and K instead of straight nitrogen, like we've done in the past. Is there any truth to that? Look, Tyler, you can read a lot of things. A lot of people talk about that. When it comes to poverty grass, it's basically an indicator that your soil is broke. So let's hope it's not, but without seeing a soil test, I can't tell you for sure. So Tyler asks here, what blend of fertilizer would you recommend us putting on? I have no soil tests. Our advice, again, Tyler, is I'd just pull a few soil tests, even if it's just a couple. Let's find out what we're dealing with here, because I hate to tell you, oh, yeah, just go put a bunch of P and K on, and then maybe you don't need both of them, or maybe you do need both and really high amounts. I don't know. I'd just be guessing, but I would say this. The better you fertilize any crop out there, the better chance it has to choke out weeds. So we are big believers in overall fertility programs, having good soil fertility levels. And it's not just the N, P, and K. We also want to think about things like sulfur, calcium, magnesium, zinc, iron, boron, manganese, copper. Take a look at everything, get a complete soil test, and if you want to send that in to us, we'd be more than happy to take a look at it for you. Next one here is from Monty, who says, what's your recommendation for thistles? I've been told 2,4-D isn't enough, and I should use Stinger in the fall so the plant takes it down into the roots better. I'll be using a handheld spot sprayer because they're in my pumpkin patch, so that limits my options. Also, thanks for your soils clinic. I learned a lot and got to shake Darren's hand. Best day of my life. Now, Monty, I don't know. Are you sure you're okay down there? If that's the best day of your life, I don't know what to say. Anyway, about your question, I'm very concerned about you using Stinger in a backpack sprayer because Stinger can be hard on the eyes. Now, hopefully there's no problem. Hopefully it doesn't get anywhere near your eyes, but this is the reason why I don't want our people on our farm using Stinger in a backpack sprayer. So what would I do? I'd go spray some Roundup, and I would spot spray it where I need to get those thistles. That will kill the thistle, root, and all. 2,4-D will just burn it down to the ground, so that's really it. So, yeah, if it's me, I'm going Roundup. All right, next question here is from Ben. He says, with your fertilizer removal app, your app is awesome. Would you mind sharing with me what numbers you're basing removal on? Where did they come from for the basis for the calculations? So, Ben, it came from the International Plant Nutrition Institute. They worked with a number of universities over a long period of time and were able to figure out, okay, what does each crop need based on each yield goal? And so it's really good information. It's just that a lot of people weren't using the information. So we appreciate them sharing that with us and allowing us to share that information with you, because I'm with you. That app, I use it all the time. The Ag PhD Fertilizer Removal App. It's great. So we're super thankful that the International Plant Nutrition Institute did all that work and allows us to use that information. All right. Next one here is from Riley in northern Minnesota, who says, hey guys, I got some soil tests for you to look at. It's newer land to us. We're looking to build levels to achieve yield goals of 180 bushel corn and 60 bushel soybeans. We own this ground. We don't have tile in it yet. And it's been soybeans the last 2 years going into corn. So Riley, I took a look at your soil test information here, and here's what I see. The cation exchange capacity really varies. So like even on this first page here, and you get a whole bunch of samples for us. And so I did look through them all. But even on this first page, in the first 10 samples, you got a variance in cation exchange capacity of 13 all the way to 44. So 13 would be a medium textured soil. 44 is super heavy. Also, whenever I see anything that's in the 40s and above, quite frankly, even the 30s and above, I'm often thinking about, do we have excess lime out there? Is there so much calcium that the soil can't even hold it all? Or what's causing that cation exchange capacity to be so high? Because almost no lab that I know of uses a hydrometer to actually measure cation exchange capacity. They usually just make a calculation. And how they make that calculation is based on the cations that are in that soil. So they take a look at things like calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium, and they add those things up. Now, granted, they have to use atomic weights, and it's kind of a complicated formula. But what I'm saying is the more calcium you have in your soil, the more that's going to drive that number up. And sure enough, when I look at your in spots where you got 37, 44, 37 for cation exchange capacity, I see 6,000 parts per million, 7,000 parts per million, and 6,000 parts per million again of calcium. That's a lot of calcium. So it's in excess right now. And you have some spots where magnesium is in excess too, where you're at 20% or 24%. So how you flush out excesses? Two things. Number one, we got to make sure we have good drainage. So at least in those spots on the farm, that's probably where I'm going to be putting tile first. Now, I will say you don't have excess sodium buildup, and a lot of the things that we would, they'd be real fast identifiers for us to say, oh, wow, you got a major drainage problem here. I don't see that. Your salt level isn't off the charts. Same thing with your sodium. I mean, there's nothing that would indicate to me that there's any major drainage problem. But at least in those spots, that would be where I would at least consider it first. But anyway, so that's step one. Step two is you just add more sulfur to the field. So your sulfur levels everywhere are low. The other things I see that are low, potassium, you're down into the hundreds, between 100 and 180 for the most part, parts per million of potassium, which for some people wouldn't be so bad, but when you're dealing with heavy soil, your base saturation potassium is in the ones for the most part, 1%, maybe 2% in some spots. So you got to get P and K out there. That's number one. When I look at your phosphorus levels, I got a lot of 16, 18, 12, 20 parts per million. P1, Bray phosphorus, it's low. So I'm going to invest my dollars there. And then on top of that, looking at micronutrients, I look at copper, I look at zinc, I look at boron, all less than one part per million. So I'd be working on those over time as well. When you own the ground, that's the good news. You're making an investment for the long term. When you put out P, K, copper, zinc, those nutrients aren't going anywhere. So, and especially where you farm, where the ground is frozen almost half the year, kind of like me. So you don't have to worry too much about those things. Well, you wouldn't have to worry even in lighter soil about those types of nutrients leaching away, and certainly not where you farm. All right. Next one here is from Vincent. He says, I just got this sample back from my chicken compost pile, and I was wondering if it seems normal for everything. I thought the nitrogen might be a little higher. The pile has sat here for 4 months because we started getting rain, and I didn't want to leave ruts trying to get it spread last fall. Thanks for the help. Okay, so Vincent, when I look at your compost sample here, I see 16 pounds per ton of total nitrogen, 6 pounds per ton of organic nitrogen, and about 10 would be ammonium nitrogen. So the ammonium is going to be available pretty quickly. The organic is going to release over time. So a lot of times that's where we say, hey, ammonium will be first year available, and most of the organic nitrogen will not be first year available. But anyway, I don't know what other tests are like in your area, but I know we've spread a lot of manure over the years. We've also spread some compost. I wouldn't say this is any out of line for your nitrogen thing. And then for a lot of these other nutrients, you got pretty good levels, the phosphorus, potassium, things like that. So no, there's nothing really I see that's out of the ordinary. However, there's no salt on here for a test. And I always like having the salt level so I know how far can I push this. Because, well, if you listen to the show at all, you know that from time to time, I like to push it on fertility and I'm going for higher yields. I'd like to know how much can I put on, and I don't really know that if I don't know the salt content. So that's something I would ask for in the future when you test your compost the next time. We're going to get back to more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag coming up next.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm data platform might let you manage your fertilizer plan by helping you set sample points, determine management zones, or create fertilizer recommendations. With Verify, you can do all that. But what Verify does that no one else can is take yield data straight from your combine, correlate this info to soil test points, and immediately generate variable rate fertilizer maps based on your nutritional goals. Whether you want to build soil levels, balance your field for uniform nutrition, or maintain fertility levels by simply applying what you removed at harvest. And with full integration with John Deere Operations Center, Verify can send recommendations directly to application equipment, no matter the color. Sign up for your Verify account today at verify.com and keep your farm moving. That's VRAFY.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on army worms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
One of my favorite parts of every day is when we get to the Ag PhD mailbag time. We just get so many great questions in, and a lot of people throwing out sometimes a little different idea. So this next one comes from Sean. We were talking about the disease triangle recently on the show, and he says here, and so stay with me, he's got a few things. A susceptible host is the problem, not bad genetics. A low Brix plant needing mineral cofactors to run its genetic engine is always the problem creating the disease when the right environmental and the pathogen propagate come along. Okay, well, anyway, disease is just an unoptimized host. It isn't a fungicide deficiency. It is a soil nutrient shortage or imbalance. We must optimize soil fertility and plant health will come along. Like Albrecht wanted to do, we need to make soil nutrients a depreciating asset on taxes so we're financially able to improve fertility and depreciate the cost over a longer period of time, because most acres are incredibly short, especially on the trace nutrients. Maybe Ag PhD could lobby the government for that to finally occur and make a way to build up optimal levels on our farms. Okay, so Sean throws out a few different things here. First of all, that the susceptible host is the problem and not bad genetics. I would just say this. Certain genetics are more prone to tolerate disease, and other genetics are more prone to be being susceptible to certain diseases. So I'm going to disagree a little bit there. However, I will say that if we do everything else to make that crop as healthy as possible, well, then we are a lot less likely to have disease. So I understand where you're coming from. I get all that. And I agree 100% that in many cases, because the plant is deficient in some nutrient, now it can't fight off the disease like it should. And soil fertility absolutely needs to improve on a lot of farms, mine included. We continue to work on that. We're getting a lot better, and things have been a lot better. So we now have fewer diseases. We have a lot higher yields, better profitability, all that kind of thing. Now, let's talk about his idea as far as depreciating the fertilizer. Look, one of the things that my dad started talking to me about when I was a kid was taxes. And the reason why is because he's like, look, you can do a lot of things with, he always used to call it, instead of saying hard work, he would say your back. Okay, you can use your back or you can use the pencil. That's how he used to describe it. So, and we're not trying to do anything wrong, cheat the government out of their taxes, anything else. All we're trying to do is take advantage of whatever programs are out there so we can minimize our tax burden as we go along. Ultimately, though, if you make money, you're going to have to pay tax. But the thing is, what we were typically looking for is if we made money, we want more things that are deductible now, not depreciating over time, where I only get part of that deduction immediately. And that's part of the reason why the government often talks about the 179 program, bonus depreciation, things like that. So whether you agree with that, you don't agree with that, those are things that are in the tax code today. And I would just say I like the fact that I get to deduct all my fertilizer expense right away, and it's not depreciated. So I actually prefer it the way it is. And I want you to think about this, because I've had a few people who are getting ready to retire, and they go, hey, you know, I've come up with a way to give my kids more money, and it's completely tax-free. And I go, oh, how's that? And they go, well, I'm just going to put a whole bunch more fertilizer on. I'm going to load up my soil so it's got so much P and K and zinc and copper and all these things that won't leach away, won't hurt the soil, hurt the environment, but I'm going to make that soil nutrient rich. And I go, yeah, that's a great idea. So then your whoever gets your ground, they don't have to invest so much money in the beginning in fertility. Plus, exactly like what Sean is saying, the crop should be better and more healthy with a lot less disease. All right. Next one here comes from, let's see, it looks like we got this one in on TikTok from Rockhound. Do you add any ammonium sulfate or crop oil with the 3-pre program you talk about in soybeans? Typically, no, we're not adding anything to the 3-pre's. However, if you want to burn down, if you want to use them in a no-till or, like our topic today, strip-till situation, which we do sometimes, then we may add something with it depending on what weeds we're after. So let's say, for example, we added Roundup. Well, if we add Roundup, we're going to add ammonium sulfate. Okay. If we added, well, let's see, I'm trying to think of anything, any reason why I'd add crop oil. I can't think of a reason why I'd add crop oil. But ammonium sulfate, definitely if I added Roundup. So it all depends on what else you're throwing in there besides the 3-pre's. But if all we're after is residual control with any herbicide, we really don't need spray adjuvants. Those are more for the contact activity and getting the herbicide into the plant better. All right, next one is from Jarrett. He says, I got a question regarding base saturation manipulation of magnesium and calcium. Traditionally, the way of liming I was taught was to apply lime based off the buffer pH. But what I'm concerned about is I could have a high pH and the recommendation not call for ag lime, but still be well below 60% base saturation calcium. I would like to start targeting certain base saturation levels to get to the correct pH so I have adequate porosity in the soil and availability of my cations. Now, I know Neil Kinsey says not to apply more than 2,400 pounds of calcium per acre per year. So let's just say, for example, I needed to move 1,000 parts per million of calcium or 2,000 pounds per acre. I wanted to increase by that much. Should I be using the true CCE of the lime to then tell me how much to apply, or the ECCE, or what should I be using here? Okay, so Jarrett, let's put it this way. What Neil is talking about is actual calcium. So when you get your lime test, let's say it is a ton of lime, okay? You test that, and it says, like for us, the water treatment lime we get typically says 17% calcium, okay? So in every 1,000 pounds, I got 170. So if I put a ton on, that's 2,000 pounds, I got 340 pounds of actual calcium, okay? That's the number Neil's talking about. That's the 2,400 pounds he doesn't want you to exceed, not 2,400 pounds of actual calcium. Or I mean of actual lime. He's talking actual calcium, okay? Lime, it'll be much, much higher than 2,400. And as far as using buffer pH on how to lime, yes, you would do that. And then we're strictly looking at the pH side. I would say this. Different labs give you different readings on percent of base saturation calcium. So keep in mind, Neil's lab may be different than your lab, may be different than Midwest labs that we use. Okay. So I would like to see your soil tests before I tell you, oh yeah, let's go ahead and work on your calcium thing. I also know this. We've tried a lot of stuff out and worked with a lot of farmers. I'm going to encourage you, invest your money in N, P, and K, sulfur, the micros. Do a whole bunch of other things before you're too terribly worried about fixing that calcium-magnesium thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't. I'm simply saying we can't neglect all those other things and say, well, I got to spend a whole bunch of money on gypsum here or lime or whatever else. So that I guess, is what I would encourage you to think about. All right. Next one here is from Dave, and he said he was watching our corn workshop on Acres TV, and we talked about water-soluble copper sulfate and that we had sprayed some directly onto the soil. Now, we used a dry product with rather large crystals that has not been moving our levels very quickly. I think I have found a supplier of this copper sulfate soluble product, but how do you know how much to put on per acre? I'm in Wisconsin in lighter soils. My copper levels are between 0.5 and 1 part per million. Our P1 levels, so our Bray test, divided by 30 also puts us on the low side. So, and where he's going with that is we usually talk about P1 Bray versus DTPA copper, and we want the ratio roughly ballpark 30 to 1. He says, I'm trying to up the disease nutrient, that's what we often call copper, the disease nutrient, on our irrigated acres where white mold has been an issue. Okay, so, and Brian also mentioned the sprayer needs to be cleaned out after the copper sulfate application. Yes, it can become a problem in your spray tank. So I just get it cleaned out. You don't want to have bad things happen in that spray tank, so you don't want stuff clogged up or anything else. But as far as what level should you go to, yeah, we're going to encourage you to keep pushing that phosphorus. We don't like seeing just 20 or 30 parts per million on a P1 Bray. Keep pushing that. Get up to 50, 60, 70, 80, and more if you can. The other thing, copper, how much do you put on? You just have to run the math a little bit. And I'll tell you what, we're about out of time today. So I think on the next show, probably on Monday, we'll take a little time. We'll go through copper sulfate numbers and how much you need to apply. All right, thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.